Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Tuesday morning. It's very nice to have you with us. Let me introduce our panel to you. First, remind you that you can be a part of our group by simply writing to us, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org, and we'd love to hear from you. We have a lot to talk about with really cool people, so let's get started. The Empire Report's J.P. Miller is here. Good morning, J.P.
How are you? Great. How are you?
Woo-hoo. Very nice to have you here. We are also thrilled to have investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo back with us. Good morning, Rosemary.
Good morning. I'm chastened by a reader, a listener, who told me that I'm neither interesting and I keep interrupting everybody else, so I'm not talking today.
You?
Yeah.
Me. No.
Imagine that.
No, that's absolutely wrong. Just
saying. I really think, to be fair about this, that there are some people who were sat around the dinner table and were told to not talk or not to speak unless it was the appropriate moment. Whereas...
To be seen and not heard.
In my house, plates were flying all the time.
Exactly. And interrupting, I mean, that's not interrupting. That's Italian. That's Italian-American.
And by the way, if you're not going to add and talk, you can just leave now.
Well, I think this listener would be happy about that.
Well, it's just
But I think the point is, it is a panel, and we are supposed to duke it all out and to try to figure out, you know, what's going on. And there are some people who don't get that part.
Okay, now we need letters from the Rosemary Armeo fan club.
No, just saying.
No, we got those.
We got those yesterday, too.
I'm writing one right now.
Yeah. Fran Berman is here, the Edward Hamilton Distinguished Professor of Computer Science at RPA and Faculty Associate at the Berkman Klein Center for Internet and Society at Harvard University. Is that still going on, even though you are also the Harvard Data Science Initiative Fellow?
Yes, I got renewed for next year.
Excellent.
So I'm going to keep doing that next year.
So you'll be teaching next year?
I will not be teaching next year. I will be studying the Internet of Things.
At Harvard?
At Harvard. Yep.
That is very, very
cool. Radcliffe, of course,
but
right?
I will be here this summer on Roundtable and in balmy Turin, New York, and then I'll be gone.
And then you'll be back when
and then
you come
I'll be back.
Excellent. Yep. All right.
Cool.
I've got to keep track of all these smart people. Okay. And then Dean of International Studies at Bard College and Academic Director of Bard Globalization of the Bard Globalization and International Affairs Program, Jim Ketterher, is here.
Yay.
Good morning, Jim.
Good morning.
Now you're when do you leave Bard?
So I am at Bard through the summer session, which ends in a couple weeks. And then I move back to Egypt, where I used to live, and I'm going to be the dean of the School of Continuing Education at the American University in Cairo. It's a mouthful.
Wow.
So cool.
But that is very cool.
It is very cool. I'm really excited to go back, but I'm sad to leave Bard at the same time.
Yeah. But I didn't hear any mention about sad to leave us.
And of course that. But I'm hoping that, you know, I'll find other ways to...
But
participate.
If you still have, will you be coming back and forth, do you think, with home? And,
on occasion.
Yeah. Well, then you'll come
but
see
I'll
us
be in
maybe?
Full time in Egypt.
Okay. Well,
I don't think it's right. Did you talk to President Botstein about your leaving and going abroad to Egypt?
He's very supportive of all the things that we do at Bard. So I did talk to him.
You can come back to vote, though, can't you?
Americans abroad can and do vote, and our embassies around the world to make sure that people have ways to do that, and I will certainly be availing myself of the franchise.
Suppose you get a telephone call from, you know, an Egyptian station, said, look, you're an American, you're at Bard, it's a liberal institution, and all the rest of it, we'd like you to tell us what you really think of President Trump. Would you? Or could you?
What I think of President Trump?
Yes.
I'm sure.
You could?
Yeah. I mean, I don't see any reason why not.
And if not, just play back the tapes from this show.
Right. Yeah, right.
I have a quick dumb question. What about, do you live on campus or off campus when you go do something like that?
I'm going to be living off campus. I'm going to be living in the neighborhood that I used to live in, but in housing that is supplied by the university. There are people who do live on campus as well.
A lot of Americans in your neighborhood or mostly Egyptians?
I mean, it's mostly Egyptians, but it is a neighborhood that's near the American high school. And so there are a lot of Americans.
And it's an American university. American university.
And it is the American University in Cairo. It's their 100th year of operation. A very distinguished institution, and I'm really excited to be part of the team.
As for me, I wish you wouldn't go.
Yeah, we want you all to stay around, but we're gonna. But in the meantime, we're going to suck as much information out of you as we can before you leave.
All right, let's see what I can supply.
Yes. Well, good morning, everyone. And again, a panel at WAMC.org. If you would like to comment on any of the things that we discuss this morning, Alan Chartok is with us this morning as well. Good morning, Alan.
Hey.
How are you?
You're supposed to say yo.
How's everything?
Yo, hey.
How's everything?
Yo, well, the world is still spinning, but what can I tell you?
Good to see you. Good to see you. Okay. We talked about this yesterday, but then there was more. The president escalated his attacks on the four congresswomen known as the Squad. Which was that self-identified, or who gave them the Squad name? Because I'm not sure I like it.
I think it's a media thing.
Is it a media thing? That's a shame. Anyway, so hours after, then I won't use it. Hours after the president defended his Twitter attacks on. The representatives, the four Democratic congresswomen of color, they held a news conference to respond to his remarks. There was something, I don't know, I thought more troubling about his, and I hate this term, but his doubling down yesterday was just that whole image of him behind, with the White House behind him, with the two Marines and the American flag, and then to have this
bash congresswomen,
right? Just have this bash people of color and go back, and they hate America and they're part of Al Qaeda. We'll get to the president's spelling of Al Qaeda in a moment. Did you see that?
I did. Yes.
Oh, come on! Of all the terrible things the guy's done, he misspelled the word.
No, the fact that he had to have it phonetically spelled is scary for a president.
Hey, that's
of the
radio
States.
For you, Joe. It's all phonetics.
He's not a radio.
He's
a
president
of the United States.
I see.
Well, not a radio guy.
Far from me to be defensive about this president.
yeah. All right.
The little things are
maybe
telling.
It was an iPhone correction. You never know. So
yeah. Okay. But can I go? Can I go?
Of course.
Okay. I want to go. Hey, teacher, can I go now? Okay, so...
You can go first. You can't go.
No, I got to... Here's what I'm thinking. All you have to do to see what's really going on is to look at today's New York Post. Not the other newspapers, but the New York Post has a picture of all four of these women standing together. And the Post is following the Trump line. Trump wants this to be the face of the Democratic Party.
True.
And that's what it's about.
You're absolutely right. The New York Times also wrote about that today.
Oh, did they?
At the same time that you're seeing Pelosi and because you don't want to cite the Post, but Pelosi and the progressive wing of her party are in dispute, and it looks like Pelosi might indeed win that fight. And so what happens? He immediately comes in and makes those four progressives, the face of the progressive movement, news. Big freaking news. So he's controlling that. I think you're absolutely
the
right.
The Democratic, that's what he wants. He wants those people, a quote, Democratic Socialist and others, to be the face of the Democratic Party, and he thinks he can win it that way. That's what it's about.
Do you agree, JP?
I do agree. It reminds us, this brouhaha reminds me a lot of the Muslim band. It reminds me a lot of Charlottesville, and this is a firestorm against Trump, and he loves the firestorm that he thinks helps him, and he doesn't get this when he attacks Biden. He doesn't get this when he attacks Elizabeth Warren. He only gets this when he attacks the Squad, and so he thinks this helps him. How is this playing in Ohio, Virginia, Colorado, Minnesota? Is this benefiting him or not? He thinks it is.
And, you know, it's not just whether it helps him in presidential standing, but also Nancy Pelosi, as she's trying to navigate leading a very diverse set of Democrats in her caucus, you know, she doesn't really have to worry about people like AOC winning re-election. That's a slam dunk win. But there's a lot of members,
absolutely
Democratic
right.
members who won in 2018 who were in very vulnerable seats.
Purple seats.
And if you make the face of the party those four members who are from the progressive wing, it really makes it much harder for those members to go out and say, I'm a Democrat, I'm running for re-election. And people say, well, that's not the Democratic Party that I want. And I think a lot of this has to also do with the races other than president.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's true. And I also really agree with JP. I mean, I find this both devastating and highly strategic. I mean, it's devastating to see the level of discourse in this country. I mean, the fact that the president would call out members of Congress, tell them to go back to where they came from, which, by the way, is America. These people come from Michigan and Minnesota and New York. So yeah, that's where they came from.
Even the one naturalized citizen. Even the one naturalized citizen, yeah. Has been naturalized longer than Melania.
But, yeah. But it's you know, it's also extremely...
It's also misogyny.
Well, it's also misogyny. It's also, you know, this is where it gets strategic because the fact that this plays to the president's base... And the fact that that base is not just people who are, you know, sexist, racist, et cetera, but it's a whole bunch of people who are marching in line in a homogeneous way behind him. And you're right. You know, Democrats are much more diverse. You know, we're kind of in different places. We're vulnerable in different places. And I think that heterogeneity is not serving us well. It makes it hard for us to pick early a candidate to go against him. It's hard for us to sort of pick a platform that we can sort of support. You know, all of these things are concerning, and I think he is strategic about this, but it's devastating.
You know, I love the word heterogeneity. I learned it in my PhD program, and I've been using it ever since.
I learned it in Scrabble.
Yeah, so
that's a lot of points. So,
yeah.
Thank you for sharing.
But I do want to ask the two women on the panel a question. Which is, you know, if you were Nancy Pelosi right now, what would you do?
I mean, as you just said,
she's got to protect those people, and that's the reason they took the House. All those purple districts in the middle of the country. Well, and I don't know what you do.
I don't think this is about being female at all. I think she's a terrific leader.
And she's also putting. Through the what are they calling it?
The budget.
No. But to admonish the president.
Oh yes.
They're gonna censure.
Yeah.
I think that this is not. I mean, Nancy is smarter than Trump. I think she sees the same things that we're seeing here, and I think she has an advantage here that she knows. She's playing. She does need to put down the Progressive Party a little bit, put them in their place, put them in this spot where they're shuffled in with the other Democrats.
That's Rosemary Armijo, ladies and gentlemen. Right, adjust your letters right
saying
to her.
Uninteresting things, yeah.
And not interrupting.
So I think she sees that, and she also knows that it's a way big distraction from the budget, which is we're again in trouble because the debt ceiling is going to be reached and Congress is headed out. And she knows that this is to distract from that. She's been putting pressure on, maybe we'll get into this. She's been putting pressure on him to come up with a plan, and she rejected an easy way out by saying, no, we're not going to just raise the debt ceiling.
But meanwhile, she's supporting, very much supporting these four women right now.
As she should be. I've said all along, I think this whole cat fight thing is baloney, that it's all strategic. I think both AOC and the rest of the squad and Pelosi know that, and they they're not at war. That's a construct.
If the squad were male, what would be different? Yeah. What would be different? You know, it's like four progressives being targeted by Trump.
But my point of what Trump was trying to do, it doesn't seem to be working in that regard.
No, I'm with Joe on that. I think it is misogyny. And I think if it were four men, well, then it would be four men. But it isn't. It's four women. And he knows what he's doing.
Four women of color.
Yeah. I think there's another part of the president's message, too, that's being a bit overlooked, but is very worrisome. And that is the part of his message where he's saying, if you're not happy, then go.
Yeah.
Okay, the go part, you know, we've talked about that and we can talk about that more. Who's being targeted is also important. But if you're not happy. So what does that mean? That means if you don't agree with the government's position on something, the administration in this case, their position on something, then your loyalty as an American is in question. And having worked around the world on countries that are trying to make a transition to democracy, one of the most difficult things to put in place is the sense of loyal opposition, that you can oppose certain policies, you can oppose them vociferously, and still be loyal to the country.
Yep.
Once you lose that, it is almost impossible to put it back in place.
Wow. That's really good. And it's not unprecedented, that sentiment in the U.S.
No, it's not at all.
Love it or leave it. That was from the 60s. That's from
Vietnam. And by the way, Nancy Pelosi isn't saying to these four congresspeople, you know, you don't agree with what I'm trying to put forth. So,
you
know, resign.
No.
I mean, we're seeing good discourse within the Democratic Party. It would be nice to see more homogeneous discourse.
I get back to the media and the media, how it covers this inter-party discourse. They like conflict. The bias of the media is towards conflict, and especially among and between women. And this is playing out in the coverage of this whole thing, including Maureen Dowd, who started the whole feud and then went back and wrote about it again this week, too.
Well, aren't we all culpable, Rosemary? Because, you know, I mean, even in my area, if you think about tech stuff, right? Well-running tech infrastructure is not newsworthy. It's only when things are catastrophic. You know, there's a data breach, you lose your social security numbers, or something breaks down and somebody is in danger, or
the lights
Stuxnet, you know, destroys, you know, infrastructure in another country. That's when tech hits the news front page.
Yeah, it's always bad news.
But it's not just the media, it's us as an audience. Yeah, we want to see the catastrophic things.
It's true.
But let's also remember that when Rosemary talks about the media, she's right, of course, but there are different parts of the media. I mean, I cited the New York Post this morning, it is a vassal for the president. Whatever the president wants, that's what's going to be on the front page of the New York Post. And we saw it today, the picture of the four women.
I agree with you, Alan, that the New York Post is a vassal for the president. But outlets like the New York Times, the Washington Post, Chicago Tribune, all of the mainstream media outlets are paying way more attention to Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez than any of the 2020 Democratic presidential.
Come on.
Well,
why are they doing
and I would go, I think it was Fran and Rosemary that both said it's not just the media, it's the consumers that are more interested in these people and their and the conflict rather than the 2020
contenders.
So
what you're saying is the editor sitting there, he has to fill the space for the day, right, Rosemary? Right?
Yes,
JP.
Sort of.
Yes, has to fill the space for the day.
30 seconds.
Puts his finger up in the air, wants to see which way the wind is blowing, and says, "What is it that is going to make people interested in my paper today?" And that's why it's going to always be AOC.
She's a star. Never going to see
Trump.
A headline that said the light stayed on. Who cares, right?
Right. Yeah. Another plane landed safely today.
Another plane landed safely.
Let's take a break, and we will be back. We welcome your comments. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be back right after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, J.P. Miller, Fran Berman, Rosemary Armeo, Jim Ketterer, quite a group, and we welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Alan has the letters. Let's do those, and then we'll move on to other stuff.
Okay. Aline wrote us a letter. Dear panel, I finally had the conversation with a friend that I had been avoiding. The Trump conversation. I should not have been shocked at her response, nor should I have been surprised at her denial of climate change. Trump's misogyny, the racism, and his attack on the four congresswomen. So, in the end, one friendship is over. For me, it is an issue of character and morality. I experienced a tiny portion of how divisive our country is on a personal level, and if there are more of them than us, I fear for the coming election, and that's Arlene. And where is she? In Tulum, Mexico?
Tulum.
Wow.
Thought I mentioned that to all
nice.
Of you.
Wow. To all
no,
you
but
would
it
be
is true.
App
Can
listeners.
You have a friend? Can you have a friend who is a Trumper?
Yes.
That's exactly right. You know, my son's ex-father-in-law passed yesterday. He was a Trumper. We loved him. But we loved the guy. He just was wrong, that's all.
Yes. I have had and have friends who are Trumpers.
Arthur Brooks, the outgoing president of the American Enterprise Institute, has written a book on how and why people need to redouble their efforts to talk across the political chasm and find ways to engage in meaningful conversation. I mean, I think maybe what he would say is that it's after this letter writer's conversation, then she decided to end the friendship. Is that the only alternative? to say, well, now I know your views, I'm not going to be your friend.
I just want to set you up because of something you said yesterday that stayed with me for most of the day, which is that for all of the people, you made the statement that for all of the people who have said that, is it fair when you say, if I voted for Trump, that you're a racist?
Yeah, I got into a Facebook dispute about that. My view is that if you have old friends and they are Trumpers, you learn to compartmentalize and you never talk about politics with them. I can still be friends with them. I have
which runs in
like
the face
that.
Of what we were hearing
but,
from
yeah,
Professor.
But if as a new person, if I met a new person, I do look at their politics. We talk politics and I would not make friends with a new person who was a Trumper. I cannot. And part of it is this talking. I do believe that if you voted for Trump, in fact, I would change. I would edit that. If you still support Trump after you've seen the last 2.5 years, okay, if you still find what he does right, you are either a racist or someone who is as good as a racist because you are dismissing his racism and think that other things he's doing take priority. And that is racist.
So I'm not with you on that one, Rosemary. I mean, I do know and, you know, have relationships with people who voted for Trump. And
I prefer
not to have relationships with people who are racist. But, you know, I think this is tolerance. It's open-mindedness. I think there are a lot of reasons people come to the decisions. If those decisions are well-informed or make sense to people and, you know, there's lots of reasons to be good to be friends with people. And I think that every friend I have, I disagree with, you know, something about. And
me too.
You know, if somebody's extremist, if they are sort of part of the, if they're a white supremacist, if they're, you know, those kinds of things, no, I don't have friends who are white supremacists. But
it's
people
a,
who voted for Trump,
Fran.
I think that group is maybe a little bit more heterogeneous than we think.
That's why I changed it from voted, because they took a chance, to still support after 2.5 years. If you still support him now, you have some problems with racism, and that does bother me.
So
I don't think it's like disagreeing about, you know, what to do on Saturday night or whatever other friends agree with. This is fundamentally different,
so
and there is
have,
racism.
I'm assuming you're pro-choice. Do you have friends who are anti-abortion?
Correct. That's why I think it's different than that, because that is deeply philosophical, and it's that is, again, on a continuum. I believe, like my mother, I think that probably abortion is murder. And so, but fine, I'm free never to have an abortion if I should need one. But that doesn't mean that I get to impose it on another. That's a whole lot different than calling women of color names and communists, untrue, horrible, slandering names. That put them into danger. That is a blatantly racist act.
So let's go
back. I mean, my understanding.
Wait, one second. Let's go back, if we can, to Nazi Germany. And all those people who said, we just have to listen to this guy, he's a clown, this and that, but were unprepared for the consequences that came out of it. So the consequences that I think are going to come out of Trump is a potential for a totalitarian country, a system which is extremely different. I think at this stage of the game, you have to be very, very vehement in opposing this guy.
Agreed.
I don't know. It seems to me, I mean, my politics are more similar to the two of yours than my friends, certainly, who voted for Trump. But here's what I see. When we do talk about Trump, what I see them saying is a lot of them think that a lot of his behavior is pretty reprehensible, but they like his philosophy.
Correct.
His philosophy that's pro-business, his philosophy that's somewhat isolationist. You know, they like what they see as the results, and by the way, they get their information from very specific places, just like I do, in a sense, but not
yeah,
very
but can
different.
You, can you pick and choose about people?
I think Joe's right.
I mean, he's really good. He gives to the church. If he just didn't kill those kids.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. I mean, it's all nuanced and contextual on how much of this and how little of that. I'm just saying, you know, to me, painting things, and I'm probably getting myself in trouble here, but painting things with a really broad brush, saying that all people who voted for Trump or all Republicans or all Democrats or all women or all men, I think that gets you into trouble.
Well,
I think
also
the voting
think that,
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Sure. All right.
A point for Rosemary.
that it's the thing is that we're in the midst of it now, so it all seems to be focused on Trump. But it's not just about Trump. Trump is a symptom of deeper tectonic shifts in the country.
Yeah. Teutonic shifts.
Yes.
Good. Well, boom. Yes, could be, and it was going on before he came along, before he went down.
But also in the world. Right?
And in the world.
I mean, you, of all people, you've seen this across the globe.
Absolutely.
You see this in the UK, you see this in Australia, you see this in France, you see this everywhere.
But let's keep it in the American context for a second, because I think we need to be specific about it. When, Fran, you mentioned specific policies. These are basically all the policies of the Tea Party. The Tea Party, before Trump came along, essentially gutted the Republican Party. They made it possible for Trump to eviscerate the Republican field in 2016.
Yeah.
And he is, in terms of policy, he's implementing those policies that were already in place. And so Trump came on, he's riding this wave. He will leave, but the wave will continue after he goes, however he goes, whenever he goes. And
If he goes.
That's another question. And that's always a concern that people, you know, use the ballot box to get in and then won't leave. And he certainly hinted at that as well. But I think, you know, in terms of these policies, I mean, Alan, you said, you know, you need to vehemently oppose this president. That's not the same as saying, well, what's this larger wave that's going on? And what do we say about people who support those particular policies,
well,
irrespective of this immediate president?
It's true. So why is he in office right now? You can say the Tea Party. I don't agree with that. I think it's called television star. Throw them some red meat. Make it clear to people who don't follow politics, hey, this guy's different. He says what he thinks, and that's all that matters.
And I think they're mutually exclusive.
I think it's the Russians are the reasons that he's in office. But nevertheless, to get back to your very good point that, to me, the scary thing is not just Trump. It's the 40% approval rating. And for that reason, these are the friends and the tolerance issue that we got back to, Fran. And to me, you resist means you do what's inconvenient. I do not shop at Home Depot because the head of Home Depot is a good friend of Trump's. Trump wrote tweets in support of him. Even though it's inconvenient, my brother-in-law bought me a new hose yesterday. I had a fit when it came from Home Depot and refused to reimburse him, and he took it back. That was not friendly or fun, but I felt like I had to do it. And the same with friends. I am not going to make friends or try to reach across the table to someone who says about Trump, oh, if only he would stop tweeting. That would not make him any less racist or misogynist.
Right, but
his policies reflect that. And by the way, I boycott
places too, because it's at the end of the day, you know, what can an individual do? Well, you can vote with your vote. You can vote with your feet.
Yeah.
You can vote with your wallet.
Which is
what
I
do all
to
of
say.
Those. Yeah.
Half this country.
And so good for you, Rosemary.
Half this country voted for Dick Nixon. And in fact, maybe a little bit more than half, because there's still some question about that election. So that fundamental division within this country has always been there. We all knew what Dick Nixon was, what he represented, what he wanted to represent. So we shouldn't be surprised about the 40% that is solidly in Trump's corner here.
So I hate to sound both idealistic and Machiavellian at the same time. Now I'm really setting you up. But, if everybody who voted for Trump is not friends with everybody who didn't vote for Trump and vice versa, where does that get us? Why is that an improvement?
There's a lot of writing that's been done and being done about how the country is sorting out, where people are no longer friends across the aisle. They're no longer marrying in different parties. Neighborhoods
except
are sorting
Kellyanne
out.
Conway.
There's a real sorting out going on in the country.
That's
this has all kinds of political implications for how you draw political district lines.
But it has social implications, too.
And
they're not good.
It also depends on who you choose to associate with. Like, I just moved into a new neighborhood 3 years ago. I've got a lot of new friends. I don't even know how they feel about politics because
you don't ask them.
No, it's so nice to talk about. We have a nice life. We got little kids. We got all this nice. Why get people involved in politics when you're having that?
So
nice,
what if it were early Germany? Would you like to move into a neighborhood and
not
talk
early,
politics
it's
to them?
It's 2019 America, and we have great relationships. I don't even know what people's political persuasions are, and I don't care. I want to enjoy a relationship with them. That's how I. deal do with.
I can see that, and I understand that. I just am surprised that you can ignore politics. I find maybe it's me, and I bring it out, but politics is like early on in the conversation, it comes out.
Exactly. And doesn't JP know within the first 3 seconds of a conversation, I know I do, with somebody, oh, this is a Trumper. Yep.
Yes. I have lots of people I don't know, you really? Know, what they believe. Yeah, we have a great community. My ballet class, which you all know is very important to me. It's like yeah. There's a great community of people in it. I don't know how everyone voted.
If they're in a ballet class, you
well,
know
let
how
me
they're
do stuff
feel
together,
about
right? like we're not talking about how hard it is to do a that. Pirouette. Let's get serious, you know.
All right, letters.
Letters. Oh, don't we have to go somewhere?
Yeah, I thought you had two.
No, you're in charge.
No, I think you have two, right?
Peggy says, four progressive representatives. They also want themselves to be seen as the face of the Democratic Party. That's the letter. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Larry says, Trump, when Dumb Donald revised his controversial statement, he emphasized that if those complainers have a problem, they can just leave. If memory serves, Dee Dee was one of the biggest complainers during the Obama administration. It's a shame he didn't follow the advice from his own playbook. Interesting. The good news is, the good news from all of that is that it may have succeeded in reminding all Democrats, including the candidates, exactly who the enemy is.
And I think it's important to remember that during the Obama administration, the main person who was promoting the birther theory was Donald Trump.
Of course.
And so why should anybody be shocked now that, these tweets reveal that
he's racist again. Yeah. Yes.
Well, the best to me was Donnie Jr.'s tweet about Kamala Harris that she's not really a representative of black Americans because her father she's Jamaican and Indian. And so she's not really a person of color. What?
Well, the racial thing is big in electoral politics. On Dave Chappelle's recent stand-up comedy routine, he talks about how he voted in Ohio. For Obama's two terms, there were big, long lines of African Americans outside of his voting location. And in 2016, they didn't show up. And it was a big, long line of white people that he had never
Although
seen
Although the Congress did go Democratic. The House of Representatives.
In 2018.
Right. What did you say?
In 2018.
Yeah.
All right. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Jim Ketter, Rosemary Armeo, Fran Berman, J.P. Miller, and Alan Chartok make up the gang. We welcome you. Panel at WAMC.org. The squad. We have a lot. So that was the we were talking earlier about this whole issue of Trump versus the squad. There was an article in the Washington Post that I thought was interesting because they went into the the origins of this idea of go back and a history of rejecting different Americans, and that the long list of that whether it be Catholics or Jews or Asians or Hispanics, that go-home rhetoric has been, as the Washington Post put it, as American as immigration itself. And the article goes on to say, President Trump's raw assertion of nativist language in attacks Sunday and Monday on four Democratic congresswomen, all of them U.S. citizens, three of them native-born, is consistent not only with his long history of attacks on people he perceives as the other, but also with the nation's oscillating attitudes toward immigration. That goes to what you were speaking of earlier.
Right. Early on in the history of the United States, the Alien and Sedition Act— again was saying that if you are an alien in the language of that time and you are opposing the policies of the United States, you are disloyal, and that perhaps you should be sent back or you should be sent to prison in that case.
And don't forget, when you're talking about early history of the United States, we had the Civil War. Do you remember that? And the fallout from that Civil War is so noticeable in the composition of our two parties and the states that are Trumpers or not Trumpers. It's astounding. That goes on.
This idea, though, that there's, again, to read from this Post article, there is hardly any ethnic or racial group in the country that hasn't been told to go back where they came from. And collections of voices from the Japanese-American internment camps of the World War II era, in diaries of the earliest Italian and Irish immigrants, in Jewish novels and memoirs from the turn of the 20th century, the slur is a mainstay. But
on the west side of Manhattan, I grew up. And they were yelling at Puerto Rican kids, go back where you came from, which is in the United States.
Mm-hmm. Well, but I will say that I've never heard a Native American tell anyone, go back where you came from. So since all of us are immigrants ultimately to this country, except for the Native Americans who are here.
And in fact, the best thing in the Capitol Steps routine, which never gets left out, is the guy comes out and he's covered with a blanket. And some racist is giving him a hard time. He takes off the blanket, and he's a Native American. It always brings tears to my eyes when I see it. Yeah.
But my question is, I guess when I read this article, I was thinking to myself, well, okay, so is this the way it's always going to be?
The answer to that is yes.
Because, you know, even though our aspirations are to be what our better angels tell us to, the fact is we're human beings and we have those devils too. That's what I think.
Well, you know, Pete Seeger always believed that we human beings had both evil and good in us. Yep. And then he could appeal to that. But he was quite cynical about the amount of evil that people had. You know.
Yeah. He thought there was a lot.
What'd you say?
He thought there was a lot, I take it.
He did indeed.
Well, there is, yeah. Right? I mean, there is.
We've seen it. We are seeing it.
We continue to see it.
And Trump knows it, and that's what he plays to.
All right. We have a lot of letters. We got a very hefty pile, let's start going through those. A
couple ounces. John says, no small point. Unlike Trump, each of these four women was elected by a majority in the constituencies they each represent. In that sense, they more legitimately hold their respective offices than he does.
You know, that might be true, but I think anytime anyone invokes the fact that Trump won because of the Electoral College and therefore he didn't really win is really setting up the Democratic Party for 2020 to lose again.
Because?
Because it's not embracing why there was a loss in 2016. It is a loss. The Electoral College isn't going to change. There's not going to be a major third party in this country anytime soon. These are the rules that we play under, and you've got to be able to figure out how to win under those rules.
No, that's
except
true.
For the Russians, and we have done nothing to fix it.
And no, I have to say I disagree on that, too. I mean, clearly the Russians were carrying out a disinformation campaign in the United States. They didn't hack into the systems. I don't think—
That's not been established.
It has been— It's not been established that they did. There's no evidence that they hacked into the systems. Unless and until there's that evidence, I think people just need to say they lost.
Okay,
and
they
you
lost
aren't
the election.
Get that. You aren't
that's not
get
true,
that
Rosemary. They didn't influence it by hacking into the system. They influenced it by marketing.
Exactly.
How many states that reported hacking
and,
of their
and
systems?
Falsely.
It was never fully investigated.
So
by,
we send
by,
our
okay,
kids
but this
to,
is a problem that is really, really almost impossible to deal with. What's fake and what's real?
Well,
and this is, you know, it's like, yes, I disagree that people aren't trying to fix it, but and I agree that it is not fixed. But it's not so clear that we will be able to fix this. We can get smarter about it. We can put in more controls. We can restrict social.
Go back to paper ballots.
There's lots of things that can be done.
But I think this is a separate issue from what Jim is saying, that we have to look at the broader. I mean, why did it get so close that the Russians could influence?
That's different. But if the Democrats take the Senate, there will be changes. I'll tell you that right now. There are going to be changes in our election law.
Well, I thought that when they took over Congress. And I'm not saying them yet.
Well, no, they took over the House of Representatives, but not the Senate,
right.
Obviously, which,
exactly.
makes a big difference.
Making it easier to vote, changing the day that people vote, early voting, et cetera. I think there will be many Democratic senators who would not support changing the Electoral College.
But that's right. But here's my point. We send our kids to fight in foreign lands to bring democracy to those foreign lands. And no matter what you say about the Electoral College or anything else, in the end, you got a president who got fewer votes than that president's opponent.
There's no doubt.
And that does not speak well of the kind of democracy we're always claiming we're exporting
to
the rest of the world.
But that's not our definition of winning. You know, that's what I think Jim was saying, or perhaps Jim was saying before, which is our definition of winning is the most votes in the Electoral College. Our definition of winning is not the most popular votes. And if we want to change our definition of winning, then we play the game a slightly different way.
Right.
But if you want to optimize for the way the game is set up now, you have to optimize for the Electoral College.
So you have both, Fran. So you send every available body and volunteer into those three or four states where, you know, where Trump took it by just a few votes. And right now, by the way, he's underwater in every one of those places. And you make sure that you are paying attention to the rules. On the other hand, there is the larger philosophical issue of how can we have a president who got fewer votes? You know,
right.
I think you have to understand why was the Electoral College set up? What sorts of compromises were made at the time of
the
Constitution.
Bad idea.
And if it's a bad idea, then what process can we go through to change it?
But
it's not going to happen before 2020.
Priority, that's for sure. As each election wanes, right? So, you know, it's always a big deal. We should change it. And then, you know, within X months, it goes away.
This is from Travis, who says, slash Trump. Trump's global appeal, specifically the global opinion on the U.S. as a global leader, has hit an all-time low, parentheses, according to Gallup. And by the way, I've always considered Gallup the best of the Republican polls. I'm not sure. I'm not sure the diminishment of our soft power due to Trump's clearly disastrous foreign policy is easily replaced or restored. Whoever achieves the office next term, Americans need to understand that tanks and fighter jets aren't the only metric with which to measure the strength of a state. And that's from Travis. And then.
Hold on. Let's take a break. Ray likes my idea. Okay, great. We'll take a break. We'll be right back after this.
Act 3 of the Roundtable panel. Good morning. Welcome. And we are delighted to have you here. Alan Chartok, J.P. Miller, Fran Berman, Rosemary Armeo, and Jim Ketter. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. Alan has a bushel full, so let's get to those.
And a peck.
A bushel and a peck and a hug around the neck.
Yeah, here we go. Okay. So we heard from Rob in Western Mass. Good morning. Is AOC just positioning herself for a future run at the presidency? Does the presidency hold the same merit as history has shown? Or do people just want to be president now to be president?
Well, I think a reasonable question is, does AOC hope that the Democrats win in 2020, or does she hope they lose so that she can come in 2024?
Interesting question, JP.
I mean, why would you even think about running for president when you're, I mean, it's like she's standing up, she's doing her, I mean, I don't know what she thinks, but she's standing up, she's doing her civic duty, she's speaking out. Why isn't that enough?
But she sees herself as a person of great power now and as a democratic socialist, which she has announced. And if, in fact, Fran, what she wants for this country is to go more on the democratic socialist model, and she's a true believer in that, then I think we answer the question.
But isn't everybody in Congress a true believer for their own political persuasion?
No, absolutely not. They're a bunch of world's oldest profession. What is that word again?
Constitution.
Yes, it is. And as always, it took you to say it. And
thank you, Rosemary, for being
welcome.
The voice of truth.
And
on the round
and that's right.
This is baloney. She is getting into a position where she can run. No question. She's amassing power and popularity. But is she doing it only because that's her plan? At 29, she goes, I think I'll leave the bar and become president. This way to do it. No. She's fighting for what she really believes in. And yes, she wants the Democrats to win in 2020.
But
thank you.
What if she loses as a result of that? So that's the real problem.
Do you know the
you
district
pay your
she's
money,
running
you take
from?
Your chances.
Well,
this
no,
is
you
politics.
Don't pay your money, you take your chances. If you're Nancy Pelosi, you're out there saying we won the House of Representatives back, and now it's potentially threatened by this divisive divisiveness, and I am going to be with the people from the purple districts who won and who got us the House of Representatives.
Yeah, and that's her job.
And AOC, if she were to lose, she would be primaried by another Democrat. So in the cold,
she's not going to lose.
Right, but in the cold calculation of.
You mean lose in 2024?
If she ever were to lose that district, would not lose to a Republican. So from a leader's perspective, that seat is safe. It's
correct.
The other seats. It's
that's
the purple
right.
seats that
that's
are really the
worried.
Problem.
That's what Pelosi's worried about.
And Pelosi's right, of course. Right. Who would want to lose right now? Look at the differences between when the Democrats hold the House and can get in the face of Trump and to the Senate, as opposed to, you know, not having that power. So Pelosi's fighting to maintain it. Makes sense.
So they're both doing the right thing. AOC
exactly.
is speaking her mind, and Pelosi's doing her job.
Well, I would agree with that. I hate to do it, but I would agree with that.
Thank
all
you,
right.
Alan.
Back to the letters.
Okay, back to the letters. All right. Thanks, Joe. Leslie says, friends with Trump supporters, I completely disagree with the panel on this one. There is absolutely no way that I would ever be friends with anyone, family or otherwise, who would support Trump. We have a classic disagreement on morality and humanity. People who support Trump believe in keeping children in cages. They believe in eradication of other races. There is no gray area on this whatsoever. They should be done at every opportunity. Okay, Leslie, I have a small problem with your letter because you said I disagree with the panel. I think there was a good deal of disagreement on the panel on that issue. Mm-hmm. So I think you take liberties. See you on the Weehawken plane.
Well, as the person you probably disagree with, I respect your opinion.
Oh, boy.
I do.
That's how you be friends with a Trump
me too.
Friend, Trump supporter.
I respect that person's opinion as well.
What? What am I missing here?
It's a great letter.
Oh, yeah, okay. Except for saying I disagree with the panel when people on the panel took contrary views. Don't you see?
Yeah.
As Festus would say. Don't you see? Yeah. Okay. And then we heard from John. Great discussion this morning. I heard someone on your panel say something that I would like to take issue with. It was suggested that Nancy Pelosi should quiet the progressive voices. I think this is right along the lines of the Trump message in that dissenting voices need to be quieted and everyone should move towards the status quo in the center. We are a diverse nation with many voices, and all of them need to be heard and respected and taken into consideration. That is our strength as a nation. Democracy is noisy. And that's from John.
I think that that's a mischaracterization of what we were saying, because I might have been the person who was saying that. And I was saying Nancy Pelosi's job, and I think Fran was just saying this too, is to manage a very diverse caucus and to have them win again and perhaps gain more seats. And that diversity requires making certain political calculations.
And to get everybody to play ball, and the squad isn't willing to play ball on everything.
Right.
Trump and M.O.R., says our friend Stephen. Does the middle of the road reach those who voted for Trump because Democrats failed them? Don't they need someone whose views go deeper, like a Warren? And that's from Steve. Well, she's collected a lot of money. A lot of people believe it in her message. Jonathan says, racism. Voting for a racist is the same as supporting a racist, which is the same as being a racist. The racist put Trump where he is. It isn't Trump that is our main problem. It's the Trump supporters. And that's John from Valley Falls.
Very well stated. My position, of course.
And so if I could ask then, so what if that is the case, what does one do about that? What do we do about that as a country? How do we manage that?
Well, that's what I was touching on earlier. I mean, do we ever get over that? Do we ever address that in a meaningful way?
Or are we just stuck in this perpetual split?
Or does it split further?
Well, there's the foo-foo answer, and there's the desired answer here.
This is Alan's word of the day is foo-foo.
The foo-foo answer is, you know, you apply, you obviously want everybody to get along and to settle their differences in a democratic fashion, right? And then there's the way it is. Vinny in my class at New Pulse, who used to stand up and ask every guest, is that the way it is? Get it?
There's also another question is that I know a lot of people who voted for Obama twice and then voted for Donald Trump. And so what about these people that voted for an African-American for president twice, and now they support Trump. Are they racists?
Well, there's another side to that, right, which is that they may not have been voting for somebody. They may have been voting against somebody.
Right.
Their actions have ended up being racist. That's why you have to edit it. You cannot fault people as racist who voted for Trump, although I do, because they may have been thinking of other things. Okay, he'll get better when he's president. He won't do this stuff,
sure.
And my economy will be better. Okay, I grant that as an element of doubt. But now, after 2.5 years, and look at either his policies or his pronouncements and his tweets, he is a racist. He is a misogynist. And that percentage of approval remains at 40%.
That's some of those people are, and I say this in quotes, ignoring his incredible misbehavior and like his results. Some people
and
do.
If you do that, that supports racism.
And so voting for Obama twice and supporting Trump, you're a racist, even though you voted for Obama over two white opponents.
Although it could be that they were voting for an outsider. In both cases,
I would say that their vote now matters. Obama proved himself in office not to be a racist, so worthy of support. At least on if you agree in other things, all things equal, we're talking morality and unity of this country. But now Trump has look at, we've been talking all morning about his division. Will we ever get over this? He's given voice to a division that's there that was papered over. Now he's opened it up again. So how you vote this time, how those people who were Obama and then Trump supporters, how they vote now, I guess that I would see that
sure.
as the test.
And, okay. and there's not a huge percentage of African-American people at Trump rallies, but you always see some
yes.
on TV. And so are those people racist?
And by the way, interestingly, always there's one. Guy who is always right behind the president when they're doing the.
So are those African Americans racist?
I would say they are really self deluded because there's no reason any black person should
anyway,
vote for Donald Trump except possibly Ben Carson.
Anyway, Teresa writes, Nazi friends, where would you draw the line before you decide that you can no longer be friends with someone? As Dylan said, how many times can a man turn his head and pretend that he just doesn't see?
Okay. That's a good question.
And Michael says, good morning. Rosemary, that's a very big blanket statement. You're beginning to sound like a Libby Post, who is the same as Donald Trump, just on the Democratic side. Also, Alan, please cut it out with the Trump totalitarian government talk. Let's not even acknowledge that. Trump will easily be voted out in the next election. By the way, folks, for whatever it's worth, and Michael, thank you for that letter. I have to tell you, there are a lot of extraordinarily bright political people, analysts, who are saying that Trump will win the next election.
Yeah, I think it's certainly yeah. possible, not
it
likely.
Is, yeah. It is not.
Luke says, what we're not talking about. I agree with Trump, rolled out the racism on purpose this weekend, in part to secure votes for his base. But he did it now, capital letters, because of the Epstein case. My bet is that Trump is terrified of the outcome of that investigation and will do anything to take the focus away from it.
I'd be interested in hearing more about that line of reasoning.
I asked Andrew yesterday on the air.
Yeah.
I said, did you ever take money from, you know, Epstein? And nope. I don't think so. Nope. So I think this is lethal, this Epstein stuff.
Huh.
But and beyond just the Epstein case, this whole idea that the president does these sorts of things to distract from other things, I'm not sure what to think about that. That would take a whole kind of thought out plan, and I'm not sure that that's how he does things. But it is noteworthy that something that I think is major news ends up buried in the newspaper, which is changes to the asylum process. This is a major change in American approach to the rest of the world.
Yeah. You know, plan, schmam. You know, the idea that this guy doesn't plan, I think intuitively he plans a lot. And I can prove my case, because he's president of the United States. You know, somehow his intuition as to what the American people need, want, other dictators have had it in the past, is right up there. It's so clear to me that this thing about he doesn't plan is misplaced.
Yeah, I don't know if it's a plan. I'm just saying, I mean, he's very good at intuiting what his crowd wants.
Is that a plan?
Or just good radar. Yeah, he's good at it, though.
We can vote, says Mike. Hi, panel. Yes, we can vote to speak our mind. But how much confidence do you have with our election processes going forward? Hackers, glitches, voter suppression? Will we ever have a true, accurate vote count again? I will still vote, but my confidence in the system is eroding daily. And that's Mike from Saratoga Springs.
Mike, I think that's completely fair. Yeah, I think the who can vote is changing. I think how we vote is changing. I think the accuracy of those votes.
Take a look at that Queens DA race right now with 16 votes. 16 votes separating the two candidates. Mm-hmm. That's unbelievable. And will anybody ever have any confidence, no matter how it comes out?
So what's the logical conclusion of that? Now, if we don't have any confidence, even in the absence of evidence in our electoral process, then where does that leave us?
Yeah.
I mean, I have to say I know people who are high-level election administrators and who are very good at what they do, and there really is not any serious evidence that people were hacking into the system in 2016. You can kind of come up with any sort of theory that you want to, but unless and until you can present evidence, this sort of thought that's represented in this letter is highly corrosive for the country.
Well,
I mean,
there's
it leads
no
us
real
down
evidence that
path.
Gun violence does harm
there's
to
no
America.
There's no evidence
that's
that we're not holding
research,
aliens at Area 51
no,
either.
Yeah,
one,
that's
one
because
at a time,
the research was not done. It was stopped on gun violence, and it's the same thing. There was evidence of hacking in more than a few state systems, and that was never explored. We should be concerned about that.
That's not true. I mean, some of that was explored, but you know, the election, far more than any misbehavior around voting machines and ways of hacking into actually changing the votes or, adding new votes or whatever, is the manipulation of the American people by getting misinformation to the right people at the right times. And it's pretty clear from all of the evidence that the Russians and others were responsible for that.
It's beyond clear. In 2016, December 2016, while Obama was still president, the intelligence community came to a finding and said that's true.
Right.
The Russians did engage in a disinformation campaign.
But, imagine that it's as easy to vote, and this could be made true, as it is to buy something on Amazon. And imagine that's open to anybody with eligibility requirements.
So imagine, but that's not happening. That's the point. The people who are in positions of power right now got there under the old system, and they're not about to let change, which you are calling for here clearly, happen because it means goodbye.
And in the American system, you don't need to hack into the system to win. I mean, the way most people win is that you're the you're on the ballot and you don't have any serious competition.
Or you buy it.
Almost all representative seats in the House of Representatives, those seats are really uncontested. Almost all of them are uncontested. You don't need to hack in. You've already won once you're on the ballot.
I understand that the system is not going to be changed. In fact, there's going to be active effort against changing the system by the people within the system. I get that. I completely get that. And I know that's reality.
Okay.
But imagine how the system could be. The system could be that it would be as easy for anyone who could vote to get in the system. There would be controls. There would be security. I mean, these things actually can happen.
You would
and
want
imagine
to do that.
There were carrots in the system.
Well, that's how change happens.
Carrots and sticks.
Yeah.
So imagine you got some credit
carrots
on your taxes
sticks.
For voting,
simple as that.
Right?
You would want to do that electronic, like as easy as voting on Amazon?
Yeah. You have to make it secure, and that's a big darn deal.
Yeah, it's tough.
Teresa says,
making it secure is a big darn deal.
Teresa says,
two letters, one and a half.
Trump supporter friends. Friends don't try to take away friends' health care. And that's from Teresa of Chatham. And then we have also heard from Tom from Southfield. The recently targeted congresswomen have expressed that they have issues with what they see happening in the country. As women and people of color, they cannot expect to see those issues addressed by a largely male and white Congress. The women have chosen to do something about it, not by going home, in quotes, to the country of their ancestors, but by running for and being elected to Congress where they can directly address the issues about which they are upset. I applaud them. And do you want one more?
I partially disagree with that. There are plenty of great men around who are working towards the same goals that myself and many of my female friends, many of them are white. You know, it's like there are plenty of great people around. You can't just assume that if you're a woman, you're good, and you're a man, you're bad, and you're not working towards the same goals.
That said, we still need more women, even the ones we disagree
without question.
With. Do.
Here's the last one.
Final letter.
Here's the last one. Dear panel, no one holds Alan in higher regard than I do. Uh-oh. And we all say, but to suggest that the Tea Party is not a reason why Trump's pathway to the presidency was easier is misleading. Alan is correct that television matters, but the Tea Party had a huge influence on paving Trump's route.
All right, we are out of time. Thank you very much for being with us. It was a very nice, lively discussion with all you brilliant folks. Alan Chartok, J.P. Miller, Fran Berman, Rosemary Mayo, Jim Ketterer, thank you so much for being with us. Great pleasure.
Party on.
Thank you.
Party on.
That's foo-foo. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.